from KQED.
Hey there, everyone. From KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. And tonight on The Breakdown, we have a woman who is not intimidated by a challenge.
She is not. Corinne Rankin is here. She's a former bail bondswoman and the founder and president of a group dedicated to electing black Republicans to office in California.
That's right. She's also a board member of Black Voices for Trump. We're going to talk with Corinne in just a few minutes. But first, Marisa, a lot going on in national politics this week, would you say? Yes, indeed.
I feel like Wednesday in particular, I think there was like 11 hours of impeachment hearings and then a, two to three hour Democratic debate. My kids would like me back, I think.
Yeah, a little bit of overload. But yeah, the hearings were interesting. We broadcast them, of course, live, gavel to gavel, as they say. And you know, it is interesting to see the different Californians. I mean, Devin Nunes, mm-hmm. the ranking member on the Intelligence Committee, obviously there to defend the president. And then you've got Swalwell and Adam Schiff, who I think is running a pretty tight ship, you might say.
I mean, you can really see the difference, I would say, just from a, like, you know, logistical standpoint in these hearings versus some of the hearings that both Republicans and Democrats have called in recent years that are strictly sort of political, whether you go back, you know, I mean, obviously these are political too, but I think that some of the hearings where, you know, when even the Supreme Court Kavanaugh hearings where you have members who are just there to kind of make, like, beat their chest, there's been a lot of questions from lawyers, a lot of sort of long-winded career diplomats who were very much trying to stay above that partisan fray.
Yeah, I kind of think of this as if this were a movie, it would be called Revenge of the Diplomats in some ways. I mean, they're there, you know, at some risk, I think, to their careers, mm-hmm. certainly in many cases. And it's kind of extraordinary when you see some of these folks, the Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, for example, who works in the White House.
Right.
You know, who
still goes in the White House.
Still there.
Gordon Sondland.
Yeah.
Still
the
ambassador.
Yeah. It is interesting. And, you know, I don't know that it so far has moved voters. You know, there's probably a narrow band of maybe, I don't know, 15% of voters who haven't made up their minds one mm-hmm. way or the other. But it, you know, you have certainly seen the as this has unfolded, that the tone of Republicans in terms of what they're saying in defense of the president has changed. I think Sondland's testimony made it a little trickier for them to basically defend what happened, although they make a point that what he testified to was basically hearsay, you mm-hmm. know, what other people had told him. He did not hear some of those things directly in terms of what the president wanted him to do.
Well, speaking of voters, we also had, as I said, another long Democratic debate.
It seemed longer than usual. I think they went beyond the 2 hours they had planned.
You know, sort of broad takeaways, and we can get into the individual candidates, but I did not realize ahead of time that it was going to be a panel of all female journalists. That was
that was
really
cool.
Neat thing to see. And I actually thought that, like, on balance, the way that the debate was sort of formatted and the questions went, I felt like was more substantive, quite frankly, than a lot of the other debates. It felt like there was a real effort to let people finish what they wanted to say.
I think that's so annoying is when they say, oh, your time is up. And they didn't do that in the same way. I mean, they kind of reined them in. I was struck by the fact that, hey, there's two San Franciscans up there, Tom mm-hmm. Steyer and Kamala Harris, who, of course, was the DA here. And I think she had a really good night. I think this was, you know, probably her strongest performance. She made a good case for herself in terms of being able to go toe-to-toe with President Trump and the electability question, the ability to put together, reassemble the Obama coalition. And I don't know whether it will accrue to her, you know, real advantage. I don't know.
I just have a hard time believing that this is going to move the needle for a lot of voters. Like, I think that there are, again, even though I think we heard more from people like Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg and Cory Booker, and I thought they all had strong nights, Amy Klobuchar, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you have so many people on that stage. Too many. They go on for so long. And it's hard, I think, to keep track for, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, to your point about, like, the sort of Trump versus Democrats, like, are already have made up their mind also on a candidate, or there's just sort of watching this, or maybe they're not watching it because who has time?
Yeah, exactly.
14 hours of political TV every day.
It does make you wonder, is there really room for two more candidates? You know, Mike Bloomberg, considering getting in, Deval Patrick, former governor of Massachusetts, has jumped in. Apparently,
nothing about them, but no, there's not room for more candidates.
There's not. You know, you got to take a few away. You know, but it is, I do feel like in some ways, Elizabeth Warren has peaked, and we began to see some of the criticisms of her having an impact in the polls, where she's kind of stalled, maybe fallen back a little bit. But Amy Klobuchar also had a really good night last night.
All right, quickly, because we do want to get Corinne in here. Big win for Republicans in California today, President Trump as well. The California Supreme Court unanimously struck down this law Democrats had written to try to force presidential candidates to release their tax returns to get on the primary ballot. Scott, you have been following this. I don't know. What's your takeaway here?
Well, not a surprise. I mean, from oral arguments, we could tell that at least four, if not more, of the justices were very skeptical of this law. There was a lower court, a federal court judge in Sacramento who had already blocked the implementation of this law. And, of course, Jerry Brown had vetoed it 2 years ago. It was a very similar version. And interestingly, the justices in their decision today quoted from Jerry Brown's veto message, saying it was a slippery slope. So not a big surprise. Clearly, this was a political point that the Democrats in Sacramento were trying to make. And
despite knowing that it probably wouldn't be held up in court.
Yeah.
So glad we did that. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we return, we'll be talking with Republican activist Corinne Rankin. You are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. And welcome back to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer. And today we are excited to welcome Corinne Rankin. She is a Republican activist who just recently started a group dedicated to helping sort of bring Black Republicans into the process, get them elected. Big Trump supporter. Corinne, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to talk about your life story and kind of how you ended up in this really political role. But quickly, what are your thoughts on this Supreme Court decision? Were you surprised at all? And are you happy to see that, you know, the president will be on the ballot, won't have to put his tax returns out?
Yes. Well, it was unconstitutional to begin with. So, no, I'm not surprised for all the reasons that you stated earlier. But I am glad to see that it's over with and that our president will be on the ballot in California for those of us who choose to vote for him.
Yeah, we should. I feel like every time we bring up the primary, we should remind people, since there's no party preference voters in California, they're going to need to register as a Republican if they want to weigh in that election, and request a Democratic ballot if they want to weigh in on the Democratic primary.
Yeah, and it was the Republican Party in California that sued to block this law. Jessica Milan Patterson, the new chair of the party. So clearly, they felt it was sort of a slapdown of Democrats for overreaching in Sacramento. Did you see it that way?
Yes, it was. And, you know, it's really, I mean, Harmeet Dhillon, just, you know, a remarkable attorney. And, you know, we had just full confidence in her ability to be able to represent our party so well.
She's a friend of our pod, for
sure.
We've
had her on.
All right. Well, Corinne, let's talk about your life story, because it's really interesting. I know you grew up as a young child in Redwood City, and you had your dad ended up working for a bail bonds company. Talk about, what was your childhood like? On the peninsula, was your family political at all?
In some ways, yes. So we started out, I grew up in Redwood City, and then after a while, we kind of moved to Menlo Park. My father had his business in Redwood City. I had family members in Redwood City. So Redwood City and Menlo Park are neighbors. So I was very much in both cities kind of growing up. Yes. So my father started out in San Francisco here. He worked for a company named Puccinelli Bail Bonds. And then he moved to Redwood City and started his own business. To this day, will deem himself the first Black businessman in San Mateo County. So I will just go with his word on that.
What kind of politics? I mean, you said he was somewhat political.
Well, he was somewhat political in the fact that, you know, being in the bail bond business, you do have a lot of interactions with criminal defense attorneys, with prosecutors, with judges, law enforcement. You know, there's, you know, certain things with your board of supervisors, your city council that you may need to get involved with and get them their ear on certain things.
But he wasn't like a hardcore Democrat or Republican?
Was he a Democrat?
Yes. Okay. He and my mother both were both Democrats. I was raised to be a Democrat. Yeah.
Well, I read that when you guys moved to Menlo Park, that, you know, the peninsula is still very segregated. The world was still very segregated.
Yes.
And you've talked about that your dad was able to overcome the redlining there. Mm-hmm. You guys ended up in an all-white neighborhood.
Yes.
What was that like as a young child? Was it hard?
Somewhat. Yeah, it was, you know, to some degree, I didn't notice at all that we were pretty much the only the black family in the neighborhood. But then some days, yeah, it was very much noticeable. I mean, I went to, you know, a Catholic school in Menlo Park, and we grew up in white neighborhood. So it depends. You know, like I said, it was a day to day. Some days I didn't notice. Some days I very much noticed.
And I think you worked in your dad's business maybe as a teenager or something like
I
that.
I did.
What
yeah,
do you remember about that?
Some summer jobs. Yeah,
quite the office to be working in, I'm sure.
What did you do? Like, what was that like?
I had to do a lot of filing. Okay. I answered phones. I would keep the data and documents together.
What kind of people were coming in? I mean, you said defense attorneys, for sure.
Of course, right. We were in a building with nothing but defense attorneys. We're in the criminal defense attorney building. Everybody would come in. You'd get, you know, some of everybody. You'd get, you know, moms, dads, you'd get, you know, defendants, you know.
Did you have an impression of the criminal justice system that you took away from that experience?
Yes. So I ended up doing being in the bail bond business for a little over 15 years. And yeah, I do have some incredible takeaways just as in the system as a whole.
Like what?
I very much respect our criminal justice system that we have here in the United States. I think that it's designed to be fair. There are some injustices that happen. There are things that I do see that can be improved in certain regards. A couple of things that I'd like to see be, you know, brought back, like Prop 36, you know, drug court, where people who are addicted to drugs can be sentenced to rehab instead of hard time in jail. You know, things like that, you know, I think were very beneficial to our society. Were just kind of defunded and, you know, they kind of fell by the wayside.
That's so interesting because I think that the perception of bail bondsmen, and you had like Dog the Bounty Hunter have his TV show, and a lot of the folks, quite frankly, who are lobbying in Sacramento, and we'll get to this, and, you know, have a very different sort of law and order viewpoint. I mean, it seems like, and I know in your group, you guys talk a lot about rehabilitation. Was that something that you felt like you really learned interacting directly with offenders and their families?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would see the benefits it would happen right before my eyes, where you see from the day you bail someone out of jail, you could see sort of the state of mind they were in. You can tell that they were struggling with their addictions. And then once they'd get sentenced to, you know, rehab, and then they'd kind of have to come in and follow up and check in with us. And you could really see in their face and in their demeanor that these rehab facilities were benefiting them.
At what point, you said you grew up in a Democratic family and sort of, I don't know if you considered yourself a Democrat or maybe didn't think about it. You did, yeah. So
did.
Like at what point was it, I assume it was some point when you were running that business where you thought, you know what, maybe I'm a Republican. How did that go?
Well, I grew up as a Democrat. And, you know, I always thought Republicans were racist because that's what I heard. You know, I thought George Bush was a racist. And I voted for Obama and Biden the first time around, 2008. And at that point, I was kind of disheartened with the Democrat Party just in and of itself, just because of the politicians that I knew that would, you know, say they want to raise my taxes so that they can pay for this for school. You know, I had children in school at the time, and I just didn't see those changes come. I saw the taxes being raised, but I didn't see any, you know, improvements in the school per se. And matter of fact, I saw the schools, you know, progressively get worse. And, you know, I'd hear politicians say one thing, and then I started going to the meetings, and they'd actually do the exact opposite of what they would say they wanted to do. So I became really just disheartened with the Democrat Party overall. And when Obama came around and he was talking about hope and change and he said all these wonderful things, and I thought that he was in the same place I was, where he was kind of disheartened with the party and was going to change things. And, you know, it gave me hope. And so I voted for him. And then when I saw him get into office, I saw that he just went right down the path of doing the exact same things that had sort of disheartened me before.
Did you feel pride as an African-American woman in having a black president?
Was it
like a debate in your head because you're at the same time saying, I don't agree with him?
Well, it was You mean after I became a Republican?
Well, in that transitional period.
Or just watching
period.
Him, yeah, yeah. That you were like, I was so excited about this, but now I'm not feeling like the gains. Like, I'm getting the gains.
Well, it was twofold for me, because one, it was the fact that he was black and he had this, you know, great black family with these two beautiful daughters. It was that plus his message of hope and change. And so those two things combined is what really made me want to vote for him, because I don't see myself as – maybe I would not have voted for him if I didn't agree with his message from day one. Mm.
Did you have to sort of come out to your family as a Republican?
Well, I had to come out to myself. At first, I was in denial. You know, I went and read the platforms, and I thought to myself, oh, my gosh.
This is the national parties or the
Yeah,
state
the parties? National okay. parties. So this is back in 2009, mind you, so I'm sure that the websites look different today. But I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, I this can't be. I think I might be a Republican. And I just like hurried and clicked off my computer. And I was like, I'm just not going to think about this.
Was it like the stuff around taxes and regulation or what?
Yeah, it was about these around this stuff about taxes, regulation, just, you know, small government, you know, things like that. What, you know, I agreed with. They resonated with me. It was the way I grew up. You know,
are your parents still alive?
Uh huh. Yes, they
so
are.
So, when did you come out to them as a member?
They survived your
the
telling
GOP?
Them you were a Republican.
I think they were in denial at first too. So they were like, "Okay, whatever, and let's change the subject."
Okay.
But now, you know, I think just during this progression of me becoming a Republican and me being outspoken and involved in the party, and you know, my parents, they see how well I've been received and how, you know. It's been some years, but, you know, recently my father was like, you know, I'm going to register and become a Republican.
Oh, he is. So did he vote for Trump? Did he vote for Trump last time?
No, he didn't. Okay. No, he's just said this last year that he was going to register. And so I can see my mother slowly coming around, too. She's like, you know, I'm proud of you. This is good. I can see this.
We,
I can see what you're talking about.
We were, of course, we met, we saw you at the Republican convention in Cleveland in 2016.
Yes.
And you know, if you look at the California delegation or the more delegation more broadly nationwide, it's pretty white. Right?
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And
no so, mistake there.
And, you know, I just wonder, like, did you feel, hey, the party has to do a better job. There need to be more people like me here. And why aren't there? And like, what conclusions have you come to about why that's the case?
Well, I noticed it in 2016. I notice it when I at conventions with in our California party. It's very obvious to me now, and so it was kind of easy because I didn't really have to draw any conclusions because at our previous convention in February, you know, I heard there sort of was this narrative based on the data that the party received that said that, you know, they weren't going to put any of their time and effort into doing any black outreach because the population of black in California is so small. And I can see that from a business standpoint. I can understand that. But from a moral standpoint, ethical standpoint, and just, you know, from a community type of standpoint, I didn't think that was a very good decision for them to make. And so we kind of all came together, all of us, you know, black Republicans, we kind of met amongst ourselves after and said, you know, we're going to do something about this and we're going to work to make some real changes here. And then that's what inspired us and I guess led us to create this organization.
If you're just joining us, I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer, and we are talking to Corinne Rankin. She is a Democrat or a Republican Party activist. She's former bail bonds woman, and you were just talking. It's the Republican Legacy Alliance. Is that?
It's the Legacy Republican Alliance.
Sorry,
yes.
Flipping those around. So this, like, I have this right in front of me. So the idea came about after you sort of heard that the GOP in California wasn't going to put this effort in. Talk about what your plans are. What are your goals? What's success look like for you?
Success to us looks, it's kind of twofold. So it's sort of we've got our work cut out for us. One is just to outreach into the communities. To sort of reintroduce the Republican Party to the black community. And I think that'll be very important because I kind of understand where people are and understand their state of mind because I was there myself at one point. So I think a reintroduction is very important first. Second, we would like to recruit more Black people to the Republican Party and to actually be involved in our party politics, be involved with our organization, and really work to get a seat at the table on a statewide level, because we don't have one. We haven't had one, and we need one.
Do you think that, I'll put it a different way, how has President Trump changed, for better or worse, your effort to recruit African Americans into the party? Has it made it harder? Not changed it at all? I mean, what impact has he had?
Well, like I said earlier, when I was a Democrat, I thought George Bush was a racist. So it took me a while to have to really go through my memory bank and think, why exactly did I think that again? What exactly did he do and say? And you know, I couldn't come up with anything. So I have come to the conclusion that no matter who's the Republican president, you're going to hear this narrative that Republicans are racist. And I think that President Trump has actually made things better, especially with most recently with his launch of the Black Voices Coalition for his campaign.
Which you're on the board
which
for.
Which I am an advisory board member for that. It's historic. And it's historic because, one, it's a Black coalition for a Republican, you know, sitting Republican president, which is something that has never happened before. So the fact that this president is doing that, the fact that, you know, he at the launch, he said that he's making, you know, Black voters in America a priority for his campaign. That in itself is historic, and it helps us a lot, you know. And I'd have to say that, you know, the efforts of Katrina Pearson in this, you know, putting this together is just it's commendable. It's absolutely commendable. I mean, she really put her hard work into it and made these, you know, historic things happen.
Can I ask you one thing? I mean, I know that you're talking about this idea that, like, racism is just being sort of thrown at Republicans. There's been some pretty documented things around Trump's business practices and especially real estate development around Black communities and redlining and things that your family actually lived through. But I know that also the thing that attracted to you was his business. I mean, does that bother you at all? Have you gone back and really looked closely at that stuff, or do you feel like that's just in the past?
Well, redlining obviously bothers me. I don't like it. I don't believe that, you know, businessman Donald Trump was the problem. I don't think that he implemented, you know, redlining across our country. I think it was a practice that more people than would like to admit to are guilty of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that still happens today.
Absolutely.
There's still in CCNRs and, you know, certain cities and certain neighborhoods where things like that, it still uses that language.
How hard is it to like, what's the pitch to African Americans? I mean, and how much resistance do you feel when you go talk to them?
Well, I used to feel a lot of resistance, but lately it's not so much. I think that, you know, with President Trump and the First Step Act, mm-hmm. And the criminal justice reform is really resonating with the Black community in just a huge way. It's something that President Obama worked on for 8 years and couldn't get done. And then our President mm-hmm. Trump comes in and he's able to pass it right away. And that's the First Step Act.
It must be frustrating that he doesn't talk about that more. I mean, you
well,
know,
he does. I just don't. It doesn't get media coverage because for some reason I hear it a lot. Mm. It's just yeah. over and over. And I just don't think it gets enough national coverage.
On that, I feel like some of what you do is like act like almost a therapist for people who want to come out. I know there's a story about you at counseling. I think it's Isaiah Washington, the actor from Grey's Anatomy, who's also Black. Can you just talk about that? Like, what are these conversations like with other people of color when you're, you know, sort of saying, hey, it's fine. Like, I'm here and I'm things are good.
Well, so I usually like, you know, I like Isaiah to speak, you know, on his experience. It's not really fair for me to say, but it is, you know, I'd actually take a lot of pleasure in it. It feels really good to me because I didn't have anyone to sort of look to mm-hmm. and I was kind of coming out of the closet of being a Republican. I didn't have anyone to sort of, you know, bounce these ideas off of or, you know, say, well, you know, why don't Republicans do this? Or why do we do this? And why do they do that? And have someone to, you know, come and answer, this is why, this is the meaning, this is what it means.
So I know that you guys, you said earlier that initially the GOP in California didn't plan on spending a lot of time doing outreach to the Black community. But we've also seen, you know, Jessica Milan Patterson get elected, the first Latina to lead. That's a very young woman. I think that there's a real sense among her and other leaders that they do need to outreach to a more diverse coalition. Do you feel like the party is sort of hearing the work you guys are doing and is going to get behind it?
I hope so.
Yeah. Have you talked to Jessica at all, or have you, our party leadership, like, I don't know, it sounds like I feel like we hear a lot about Latinos and the need to bring them into the fold, but it doesn't sound like that is necessarily being carried on to other people of color. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right. well, we just have a few minutes left. I know that you did close down your bail bonds business a couple of years ago. You're doing consulting work now. We always love to end on a high note. I wonder, what are you doing for fun? Is this your idea of a party? Is going out and recruiting people
watching
for
the
office?
For fun, we're actually avid boaters, so we do a lot of boating, especially in the summertime.
Like sailboat or motorboat?
Motorboats, yeah. So we boat a lot in the Sacramento Delta, which is just amazingly beautiful in the summertime. We go to Canada and boat there around the island. So I get my fair share of fun and relaxation, but, you know, then I come back home and, you know, Monday through Friday, it's 9 to 5. We gotta, you know, we have to reach out to our communities and, you know, do whatever we can to make people's lives better.
Do you feel like that is fun for you?
It is fun. You know, it's rewarding. It's fun. It's not always fun. It's sometimes fun, but it's always rewarding.
And are you in 2020? I mean, is this something that you think you guys could model for other states that you could export sort of beyond California?
Absolutely. So we launched this in September, and the response I've been getting is so overwhelming. I've had people from Chicago say, "Can we implement a chapter here?" People in Minnesota, in Baltimore, everywhere. Well, but
I was going to say, in Alabama, there was a really up-and-coming 32-year-old, I think, African-American Republican elected attorney general.
I mean, Cameron Daniels. Yeah. Yes, I met him. He's a very smart. So the fun story is I met him at the launch for Black Voices for Trump. So I walk up to him and I tell him, you know, congratulations. My name is Corinne Rankin. I'm president of Legacy Alliance. And he says, I know who you are.
Hey, that's good. So you guys feel like you're getting that.
So I feel
out.
Like I'm getting, yeah, we're getting some notoriety and some recognition.
All right. People we're going to have to leave it there. But Corinne Rankin, thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
It was fun. That is it for this edition of Political Breakdown, a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin and Seal Muller. KQED's team includes Holly Kernan, Ethan Lindsay, and Vinny Tong. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
I'm Marisa Lagos. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at MLagos. If you're listening on the radio, please go subscribe to this podcast. It posts every Thursday night, and you can rate and review us there as well.
5 stars recommended.
We hope so. For now, that is it. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.